This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Welcome into Sports Daily. Good to be here with you on this Tuesday. Jacob Albrecht, Tommy Kester here, Jad Chambers producing for us. The IHOP hotline's open for you. Official breakfast partner of Xbox is IHOP. Come in, try the decadent, fully loaded French toast. 869-1240 is that number. You can also leave us your comments on our video stream, which you'll find on 12 News Connected, on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. You can reach out to us directly. If you're listening on the Odyssey app, you can leave us voice messages. Just click the little microphone where you're listening. Glad to be with you all here on this Tuesday. We've got Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider, coming up later in this hour in our next segment. Looking forward to that. We have all kinds of giveaways for you. If you are in the market to go to Illuminations at Botanica, if you're in the market to go to the PBR event coming up in Wichita, if you're in the market for some free tea and coffee, stay tuned here. We've got three text contests today to get you through. Looking forward to all of that on the program with you. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Happy Tuesday. I know we've got, obviously a lot to talk about. I'm excited to talk to Dan Israel today about everything going on with the Kansas City Chiefs. And I'm curious to know, and I'm sure we'll get into it with Dan and later on in the show, if he thinks that, you know, the new acquisition for Kansas City, Steven Nelson, the reunion coming in, if that's going to make any difference in the secondary for Kansas City, or if we shouldn't get our hopes up about that.
Yeah, I don't know. That is a good question. I would say I'm not holding my breath on anything at this point except DJ Humphrey's hamstring. Quick update on that. Andy Reid says he's going for an MRI. Says he feels better, but they'll see after an MRI. I got to guess, Tommy, that when you get that age, if you need an MRI, things aren't looking good. So we'll see how that goes. But, you know, back to the drawing board at left tackle, it would appear.
Do you remember that? It reminds me back in the day. This was a long time ago. It was before Andy Reid was the coach for the Chiefs. And I remember, I think it was maybe Matt Cassel was the starting quarterback back in those dark days. And he got injured and they went out and they acquired Kyle Orton. And I think Orton played maybe like three snaps and he broke his hand or broke his thumb or something. And he was out for the rest of the year. It's like, can we catch a break with this sort of thing? That kind of reminds me of DJ Humphreys coming in, playing, you know, a portion of a game, hurts his hamstring, and we could very well be back to Wanya Morris.
It's insane. It's absolutely insane. It just is. It's a joke, really, at this point, quite honestly. Whatever. We'll see. The only solution to all of it is to run the ball. Like, that's it. That's the only thing. And it's staring them in the face and they won't do it. We'll talk to Dan Israel about that. Monday Night Football last night, Tommy, it happened. It was a Bengals win. It was an entertaining game, at least. I don't know whether you want to give credit to the Cowboys for continuing to play hard behind Cooper Rush. I don't know what to make of that. I suppose just for our entertainment purposes, I'm glad both of these teams who've had very disappointing seasons are still playing hard, because that was an entertaining game last night, I thought. At least worth watching. But it was a Bengals win, 27-20. And I think both of these teams have as many questions this offseason as there will be in football. It is going to be wild to watch how these two teams navigate it.
Yeah, and on top of that, I mean, even if you're not a fan of either one of these teams, this game had a lot of fantasy football playoff implications for sure. I mean, like all the people that had Ja'Marr Chase and Chase Brown and Joe Burrow and CeeDee Lamb and, you know, other players like that as we're getting into fantasy football playoff time. And of course, all the sports wagering and everything, there were, you know, some big time angles. But another huge game for Ja'Marr Chase, another big game for Chase Brown. So if nothing else, I mean, I know that neither one of these teams are going to be legitimate contenders. And, you know, with that loss for Dallas, that all but gets them out of the playoff push in the NFC. And the Bengals are still hanging on for dear life. They need a bunch of help to be able to make it into the playoffs and that final seed. But still, I mean, there are still, you know, some major implications even outside of that in that game last night.
Yeah, look, Ja'Marr Chase is unbelievable. They have T. Higgins, who was quiet last night, and quite frankly, cost some people some money. It was supposed to be the T. Higgins game, the way that matched up, and it was the Ja'Marr Chase game because Ja'Marr Chase is borderline unstoppable right now. But T. Higgins is awesome, and Joe Burrow after the game said that he's going to do everything he can, and he knows T. Higgins will too, to stick around. If Cincinnati can keep the offense together, and their offensive line has not been good, both in Burrow getting, you know, they've sort of got some of the same issues the Chiefs have, but Orlando Brown is hurt, so maybe it gets better naturally. I just wonder, like, how quickly can they return to what we thought they'd be? Is it strictly, you know, make a couple of changes on defense and all is right in the world? It feels like it probably is, and I guess that's the benefit of a good quarterback, right? Like, you have a great quarterback and you kind of can get things turned around quickly. And then, you know, on the other side, Dallas, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what they're going to do. Mike McCarthy has them playing hard, has won lots of games, but he should have been gone before this season. But it would have been tough because he wins all these games. They should be getting crushed with Cooper Rush at quarterback, but they're not. And so that could honestly keep McCarthy around. I don't think that's
more of an indictment on Dak Prescott than it is on Mike McCarthy at this point.
So here's where I taught people ask me about Dak all the time. The Cowboys' issues the past few years have not solely been on Dak. Now, he's had some duds in playoff games for sure, but Dak Prescott's not like a bad quarterback. It's almost similar to maybe to an even lesser degree than what Minnesota sort of dealt with Kirk Cousins. Like, he's good, he can be really good, but he can also really let you down. One thing I'll say about Dak Prescott, he's not a $60 million quarterback. They should have told Dak, don't let the door hit you on the way out. Like, if you want another contract after we've already given you one, goodbye. You can play this year and you can go have fun on the open market. They're tethered to Dak Prescott now, though. And I don't think anybody, like, the trading him is not.
Yeah, nobody's going to take on that contract.
So it's, and that's not like being tethered to Deshaun Watson, right? Dak Prescott's still fine. Like, he's still a decent NFL quarterback, decent to even good, I would say. But they must do other things to help him win. And the defense has not been nearly as good this year. And the Cowboys are, you know, look, for all the things that they've done wrong, they get the draft right. They're a really good drafting team. So can they have an offseason where they just infuse some talent and see if they can get it done? I don't know. I think they can do it enough to get back to the playoffs and all those things. Can they do it enough to win the Super Bowl? Not with Mike McCarthy. I think that's their bigger issue. But if they keep playing hard and playing well, and you're Mike McCarthy, I mean, what are his win totals? Let me just pull this up real quick. Because like most coaches, we would never say deserve to be fired after what Mike McCarthy has put together, just from a wins and losses standpoint, right? He's been pretty good with the Cowboys overall. Like, you go back and he went 12-5 3 years in a row. He had a bad first year, 6-10, which was to be expected. Then he won 12 games for three straight years. After 36 wins in 3 years, and listen, I was the lead in the charge. Like, get him out of here. That's almost impossible to do in reality. Now he'll probably finish somewhere around 500. But after three 12-win seasons, I don't think Jerry Jones is going to get rid of Mike McCarthy. Jerry Jones is wildly loyal to these guys.
I think the other thing to keep in mind also with Mike McCarthy in general is that, you know, his overall body of work, I know that things ended with a dud in Green Bay with him, but he's a Super Bowl winning coach. You know, he led the Packers to a Super Bowl. He won a bunch of games in Green Bay. That's what is so interesting about Mike McCarthy in general is that, you know, he has gotten his fair share or maybe even unfair share of criticism during his time in Dallas. But he overall, the body of work shows a highly successful coach in the NFL overall in his entire time as a head coach. And, you know, so it's interesting to me that he there's just constant call for his job left and right. And do I think he's going to lead the Cowboys to a Super Bowl right now? Absolutely not. I don't think that they've got the roster to even sniff a Super Bowl. But do I think that if they got a roster and if McCarthy, and this is wishful thinking, it's not going to happen, but if McCarthy had his choice at quarterback where he wasn't tethered to a guy like Dak Prescott forever and ever, amen, do I think he could lead them to a Super Bowl? Sure. I think if he could build his roster the way he wanted to and Jerry Jones wasn't a part of the picture, then yeah, I do think that Mike McCarthy has the talent, the chops as a coach, and the way that he builds a roster and the way that he builds a staff, that I think that could be in the realm of possibility. But that will never happen, you know, with the way that that organization is set up.
No, and he just doesn't seem like they have a chance in the biggest spots. It just doesn't. And again, like the Cowboys get put into this. The Cowboys get put into this weird place where they're in this microscope where the, you know, the success level for the organization, and it's self-inflicted, right? It's very self-inflicted. But in the last 25 years, there have been 13 franchises that have won a Super Bowl, right? So that's to not win a Super Bowl in the last 25 years is better than league average, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And they've won tons of games in that time. Like, I don't know what the winning percentages are over that same stretch. It's just, you know, and I laugh about this all the time. The Cowboys have won a Super Bowl more recently than the San Francisco 49ers. Does anybody think of the 49ers as this train wreck of an organization? Of course they don't. Right, it's the Cowboys under this microscope, so it is hard to appropriately gauge it. Now, the 49ers have certainly made it further into seasons than the Cowboys have.
The Niners have been in the Super Bowl several times,
but they haven't. But they haven't won it. And if we're putting the Cowboys under this Super Bowl or bust microscope, then we need to put every team in the NFL under a Super Bowl or bust microscope. And the reality is, it's kind of been the Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes show for the last 25 years. And so, like. That's what I mean. Like, it's hard for me, and I'm as a Cowboys fan, it's hard for me to ever like get a good feel for how mad I should actually be, right? Like, how mad should I really be as a fan of a team who is at least consistently in the mix, other than 2 years where Dak Prescott has been injured? They're consistently in the mix, right? Because there are so many organizations across football that don't have a chance and haven't had a chance in those 25 years. It's a weird place for the Cowboys franchise. And it's different, honestly, different than like the Yankees, for instance, because there's a salary cap, right? There shouldn't be any inherent advantages competitively when you have a salary cap. So you can't really compare baseball to it. You'd have to compare something like the Lakers to it, probably, would be the next best comparison. And the same thing happens with the Lakers. So I get it. But if we're trying to be real with what they need to be doing in an offseason, then, you know, they're going to have to just roll with Dak Prescott. And while I would make a change at coach with Mike McCarthy, they're probably not going
to. But I think the question that you have to ask, and any Cowboys fan has to ask, is who's going to do a better job than Mike McCarthy with the roster that he has?
If you're asking me that honestly, yeah. I think a lot of people would.
Like who? Like, I'd love to know who that person is.
Well, Ben Johnson's the first call you make.
Yeah.
But that doesn't
with
fit
that
the profile.
I mean, because look, like, Dak is not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Jerry Jones is obviously not going anywhere. Correct. So with the way that you are handcuffed,
CeeDee Lamb's not going anywhere.
With the way that you are handcuffed as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, where, yeah, you're on the field, you know, and you are the de facto leader of the team. You're not the leader of the organization, right? Like, and that's not the way that it is with a lot of teams. Like, obviously, like, when you look at the Chiefs, Andy Reid works with Brett Veach and works with, but Jerry Jones is the enigma in this organization, right? And so you basically have to cook with the ingredients that Jerry Jones gives you. And so what I would love to know is who's going to be able to cook a better meal than Mike McCarthy is with the ingredients that Jerry Jones gives you. And I'm not sure that really anybody could do a better job with the, I mean, because look, like, they didn't do anything in the offseason. Jerry Jones didn't bring in anybody in the offseason. And you were the first to say, should we be surprised that they're not very good? They didn't do anything. And that's on Jerry Jones. That's not on Mike McCarthy.
Correct. But McCarthy is absolutely awful at the end of games. Not like Brandon Staley bad, but bad. Their offense gets too predictable. I don't think he's the right guy. I mean, they've changed offensive coordinators about a billion times. I would call Mike Vrabel now. Don't ever forget that the Cowboys and Jerry Jones hired Bill Parcells.
Right.
Okay. And you'll hear a lot of Bill Belichick noise out of Dallas. And I don't know that I think that's the right fit. I wouldn't hate it, honestly, with some changes in the coaching staff. But like, Jerry Jones has conceded that, but he hired Bill Parcells. You want to talk about the two most polar opposite, whatever, you know, you can get. He did that. And so I'd call Vrabel first. That would be the first call that I make. And then I'd call Ben Johnson if I were the Cowboys. People act like nobody wants to coach for Jerry Jones. I don't know that that's totally true. He's the most loyal owner in football. Like, he doesn't fire people when he should. That's the reality. It's been his problem, honestly, for a long time. So if I'm a coach and you're telling me I can walk into a roster with Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons, a decent offensive line that's getting better with some young players, I mean, I'm interested in that more than I am interested in taking the Saints job.
I think that there's a lot of, and I mentioned this a few minutes ago, there's a lot of Mike McCarthy hate. And look, I get it. I understand, you know, because of the issues that you lined out. I do think that some of it is unfair on his shoulders.
Probably is.
I do think a lot of it actually is probably unfair. You know who else from time to time struggles with game management and whose offense becomes predictable? Andy Reid. Like, every coach has that sort of thing. Like, there are issues in a myriad of ways.
I would actually say I don't think Andy Reid struggles with game management, but yeah, offensive play callers are always going to be put under the microscope. So that part of it, I think we overanalyze the offensive play calling piece, but I do think game management is, like, I'm talking like, Andy Reid makes a conscious decision to put that game where he wants it and kick game-winning field goals.
But I also think that you can draw parallels. And I'm not, believe me, I'm not suggesting that Mike McCarthy is as good of a coach as Andy Reid is, because I don't think he is. But I think you can draw parallels between their careers. Andy Reid spent a long time in Philadelphia, was ran out of town in Philly. Like, the Eagles wanted him gone. The fan base wanted him gone. He wasn't winning a Super Bowl. Mike McCarthy spent 12, 13 years in Green Bay. And then went to Dallas. Andy Reid went to Kansas City. Andy Reid didn't win a championship in Kansas City until Patrick Mahomes came to town. Now, he won a bunch of games. Mike McCarthy has won a bunch of games in Dallas. Mike McCarthy's also tethered to Dak Prescott. Had the Chiefs been tethered even longer with Alex Smith in an alternate timeline where Alex Smith remains the quarterback long term, I don't think Andy Reid wins a Super Bowl there with Kansas City. It wasn't until Patrick Mahomes came to town.
Unfortunately,
for Mike McCarthy, he's been handcuffed to Dak Prescott now with that contract, where they could have went out, the Cowboys could have went out and found the next future quarterback. And I know that's always been the conversation ever since Troy Aikman retired in Dallas, was who's the next quarterback for the Cowboys? And it wasn't, I mean, obviously Romo didn't win him a championship and Prescott hasn't won him a championship.
But that wasn't Romo's fault. And that to wasn't some Romo's degree. Fault.
But what I'm saying is that there's always that conversation, like, is next in Dallas? Well, the bottom line is that Mike McCarthy, I don't care, in my opinion, I don't care if Mike McCarthy is Bill Belichick or if he's Tom Landry, for that matter, he's not winning a Super Bowl with Dak Prescott as the quarterback. And I'm not sure that any coach is winning a Super Bowl in Dallas with Dak Prescott as the quarterback.
But you got to try, and you're not going to win one with Cooper Rush either. And again, I've said this, like, when you talk about what coaches come in there, think about it this way. If, and the exercise I've done here multiple times. But if you haven't, you know, been with us or whatever, you essentially, if you go back historically in a 30-year stretch and look, you basically, outside of maybe three outliers since the Cowboys won their last Super Bowl, you have to have a Hall of Fame quarterback. Almost always. Joe Flacco has one. Trent Dilfer has one. Brad Johnson has one. And everybody else is sort of either in the Hall of Fame or in the Hall of Fame conversation. And so you might be right. Nobody may win a Super Bowl with Dak Prescott. Nobody's going to win a Super Bowl with Cooper Rush or a rookie quarterback or whatever. Like, that's just the way the NFL goes almost all of the time. And yes, Andy Reid had a clock management conversation happening about him, but he didn't have his team that I can recall ever just like not show up, which happens to Mike McCarthy all the time.
I don't know
and
about
it happens
that.
In the playoffs.
It happened in the playoffs a ton with Andy Reid before Patrick Mahomes came to town. I specifically remember several playoff games, the Indianapolis playoff game.
That wasn't not showing up. That was blowing.
I remember the Steelers playoff game where the Chiefs didn't score an offensive touchdown the entire game and the Steelers beat them with field goals. Like that's I remember that game. I remember the Titans game in the playoffs when the Titans came back and beat them. Like, there were many, many, many frustrating playoff games that the Kansas City Chiefs, the Chiefs didn't win a home playoff game in like, gosh, I don't know what it was, like 25 years, I think, from the time that the last home playoff game, I think they played the Oilers in 93 with Joe Montana, and then they didn't win another home playoff game until Patrick Mahomes came to town. Like that, it was just, there were so many of these same sort of narratives. Again, I'm not saying Mike McCarthy is as good of a coach as Andy Reid. He's not. But a Super Bowl with a future Hall of Famer like Patrick Mahomes, that cures everything. People stop talking about all the issues and all of that. Unfortunately for Mike McCarthy, I'm going to defend him a little bit. Unfortunately for Mike McCarthy, he has been saddled with a massive contract in Dak Prescott and an owner/GM who is not giving him the tools to succeed. Is he going to be the scapegoat and the fall guy? Absolutely. When you're the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, that's what happens. You are the scapegoat. You are the fall guy. It's not entirely his fault. And I don't think.
No.
And I don't
it's
think,
not entirely his fault. It's not
I don't
entirely
think
Jerry
that
Jones'
it's
fault.
Fair
it's
for
not
him.
Entirely Dak Prescott's fault.
I don't think that it's fair for Mike McCarthy to have to be the one to fall on the sword. Unfortunately,
do you think
when
McCarthy
it happens, he
be
will
be
the one
year.
To fall on the sword. Yeah, I think he should be back next year because I don't think that anybody else will do a better job with that roster that he's been given.
I don't agree. I think he has to go just because the fit's not going to work. And if the fit's not going to work and you're tethered to $60 million with Dak Prescott, you got to try something else.
The grass ain't always greener on the other side.
Well, no, it's not in the NFL, but you can either fit. Don't ever forget either. Mike McCarthy was able to win one Super Bowl with a Hall of Fame quarterback and a really good roster.
One's better than
and
none.
I think, well, it is. But that's why he was run out of town in Green Bay is my point. And if it's Super Bowl or bust, and that's this, you know, I can just tell you this. Mike McCarthy will not win a Super Bowl in Dallas. I mean, it's not going to happen.
I'm not sure that there's another coach with the roster the way it's constructed and Jerry Jones at the helm.
I don't care. I don't care how the roster is constructed. Mike McCarthy will not win a Super Bowl in Dallas.
I disagree with that.
Give him whatever roster you want. And this is obviously my opinion. So if I feel that way, and then my logical next thing is, well, you got to at least try something else, right? Because you're stuck with Dak. The correct course of action would have said, Dak, get out of town if you think you're getting a new contract because you don't deserve one. That would have been the correct course of action. That's not the course of action they took, though. And so now you're tethered to it. You got to figure out what you got to do. And look, honestly, you have to have a conversation with Dak. And if Dak says, this is the guy I got to play for him, then that makes it more difficult. It's not easy. Teams don't win Super Bowls. Like it's been Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, and a handful of others for a long time now in the NFL. If it isn't those two guys, there aren't very many others. We just hold these ridiculous standards. And that's the way it is in football. And here we go. But at least we got a good Monday Night Football game out of it. We'll have Chiefs talk with Dan Israel coming up. We'll get you updated here real quick when we come back on the other side. From what we learned from Andy Reid yesterday with the Chiefs. They made roster moves. We get some injury news and a couple other notes there. We were going to talk Shockers today. We didn't get to the Shockers yesterday. Nobody's playing this week. Everybody's kind of got the week off here. for finals, but we will talk Shockers today on the program as well. Let's do our first giveaway. Let's start with the Professional Bull Riders today. PBR coming to Wichita. Unleash the Beast Tour. Friday night at Interest Bank Arena. We're giving you a chance at a pair of tickets here. Text the keyword BEAST to the short code 20357. That's professional bull riding action here in Wichita on Friday night. 20357 is the number. Just send the word BEAST for your chance to win. We're coming right back. Welcome back in, everybody. Crestview Country Club, great supporter of the program. We always appreciate Crestview's support of us here. Great restaurant there at Crestview, if you've never been in. Weekly features like this week, Tommy, I'm looking at the chicken cordon bleu, or a flatbread of the week, the cheesy zucchini flatbread. There's a prime rib night, I know, this week out there. All kinds of good stuff. The food, the social aspect of it is there for you. So give Crestview a call. Even if you're not a golfer, you don't want the sports aspect of it. There are all kinds of different memberships that include all the social stuff. So check it out. Give them a call. Tell them we sent you from Sports Daily. I got a text, Tommy, on the Cowboys here. It is from somebody here, and it says that Andy won playoff games and made the NFC championship five times in Philadelphia. Dallas hasn't reached any NFC championships, and they have been loaded with lots of talent. I would say this, and Andy Reid lost his job, by the way, in Philadelphia. We would be having the exact same conversation about the Cowboys and Mike McCarthy had they reached NFC championship games instead of the second round or the first round of the playoffs and not won a Super Bowl. Nobody sits back and counts championship game appearances, right, as a threshold. Maybe Super Bowl appearances, maybe. Like, maybe getting through to the Super Bowl is enough, because that's sort of the situation we have with San Francisco. But just, like, whether they win one or none or two, like, nobody cares about that.
Yeah, and I'm not even drawing parallels between Andy Reid in Philadelphia and Mike McCarthy in Dallas. It's between Andy Reid in Philadelphia and then going to Kansas City and right. Mike McCarthy in Green Bay and then going to Dallas. Those were
totally
the parallels that I was drawing. And the fact that Andy Reid didn't win Super Bowls in Kansas City until Patrick Mahomes came around.
It's a good parallel. It is a great parallel. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that that Mike McCarthy is a terrible coach and he couldn't get another job and go win a bunch of games somewhere.
Mike McCarthy is a really good coach. He's got the body of work to show it.
What I'm saying is Mike McCarthy with Dak Prescott is not going to win a Super Bowl in Dallas. So if it's Super Bowl or bust, which they always say that it is, then Mike McCarthy's not going to win a Super Bowl in Dallas.
My follow-up question, which I asked you before the break, is who can win a Super Bowl with Dak Prescott?
So
because I'm not sure anybody can.
That's where I would start with a guy like Vrabel, because the only path I see to a Dak Prescott Super Bowl for the Cowboys is to have, like, the best defense in football and a commitment to a run game where Dak Prescott isn't the featured part of the offense.
Did Mike Vrabel win a Super Bowl with Tennessee? And I like Vrabel. Don't get me wrong.
I'm talking he should have been fired in Tennessee, but I'm talking he's now also never had a quarterback as good as Dak Prescott. I mean, that's the cycle we go through in the NFL. Like, that's the silliness of – but what I'm saying is, like, stylistically for the Cowboys, they must become one of these – mega defense, like, basically,
I think,
like,
Mike
the
Vrabel
won a Super Bowl.
And Mike Vrabel was a playoff coach in Tennessee with Ryan Tannehill as the quarterback.
Correct.
But he had Derrick Henry running the football.
Exactly.
I think that that's a better setup for Mike Vrabel and the defense that he was able to build. That's a better setup for Mike Vrabel than going to a Dallas team with no running back whatsoever and Dak Prescott a quarterback.
They can solve running back pretty good. Enrico Dowdle's actually, I got to give, because I've been a bit of a hater. He's actually been really good lately. The problem is not this year, it's other years where the Cowboys have had at times the best or one of the best defenses in football and the best or one of the best offensive lines in football. And they haven't been able to get it done with those formulas, largely because Mike McCarthy, we'll draw another parallel, would refuse to run the ball in key moments and kept giving, putting Dak in those situations. Right. So like this cycle, and you're correct. Like, we do all of this. And the reality is, if you don't have a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback, you're probably not going to win a Super Bowl. That's it.
Bottom
in the
line.
NFL.
And that's why McCarthy is going to ultimately, and it may not happen this season, but eventually he's going to fall on the sword and he'll be the scapegoat. He'll be the fall guy for it. You know, in the same way that Jason Garrett was the fall guy and the scapegoat, in the same way that Wade Phillips before him was the fall guy and the scapegoat. And it just goes on and on and on and on and on. When there are other glaring issues, the fact that you gave Dak Prescott $60 million and he's not a Hall of Fame quarterback, the fact that you've got a guy running the organization, and Jerry Jones is beloved by a lot of people, don't get me wrong, all of that, but he's had complete and absolute control over that roster, and he hasn't really done much to be able to get them, you know, to be able to win a championship. And so there are glaring other major issues. Like, if I'm prioritizing where the issues fall in Dallas, Mike McCarthy's probably on that list, but he's nowhere near at the top of the list. But he will be the fall guy, whether it's this year, next year, or in the future.
Well, yeah, because they're not going to win the Super Bowl next year. It's fine. Look, we went down a sidebar. We didn't even intend to, and it's okay because it's really interesting, I think, for fans, because you either love the Cowboys, you hate the Cowboys. There's not really much in between. But I don't think what they're dealing with this year is all that different than Cincinnati. Cincinnati's got other issues. Makes me wonder if Zach Taylor should be in any danger, honestly. And their problem hasn't been really anything that Zach Taylor has a whole lot to do with, so I would not make a change with Zach Taylor. Cincinnati's been a little bit snake bitten in the past with injuries and everything else. They had their chance at a Super Bowl. They almost got it. And then Burrow gets hurt a lot, whatever. Organizationally, they must commit to the offensive line there. Like, what the Chiefs are dealing with Mahomes this year, Joe Burrow's dealt with his entire career. Do you remember in the year they went to the Super Bowl?
Oh yeah. He was
Often he was sacked more than any quarterback in football. I don't, like,
and you're dealing with the guy coming off of, you know, injuries, like with his wrist
and they did bring in Orlando Brown. So it's not like they've done nothing, but man, and I didn't see it. And I don't think anybody saw the Lou Anarumo.
Yeah. To me, it's more about the defense
collapse.
Yeah. The defense has fallen apart.
So crazy that they went that bad.
They gave up 27 points to the Cooper Rush led Cowboys last night.
20, but yes, I mean, it's been week after week after week after week that it's just been a massive defensive letdown. Joe Burrow's put up better yards.
Yeah.
Joe Burrow's never played better than he's playing this year. Yeah. And they just, like, their defense has been a joke. I don't think Zach Taylor's in danger, but that would obviously be the most attractive job, like, in the history of football.
I don't think he's in any danger as long as he makes changes with at least his defensive coordinator.
Yeah, they'll have
right?
To.
Like,
they'll
Lou Anarumo's done after this year.
He's been
imagine.
So good too, yeah. And that's got to be so hard. But it is what it is. Like, you got to make that change. Okay, let's talk about the Chiefs for just a second here, because we're gonna have Dan Israel top of the next hour to really dig in on the Chiefs. But a couple news and notes from the Chiefs yesterday, if you missed any of it. We got news that DJ Humphrey's hamstring feels better, but they'll know after the MRI. I take that, Tommy, as just on a Tuesday right after it happens. I'm not planning on DJ Humphries playing another snap for the Chiefs. I'll put it that way. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong, because I do think, even though he didn't look great, I thought he did look a little bit better than Morris and Suamataya have this year. So now if he's not there, at least for a short time, probably for a long time, what do they do now? And honestly, I don't think there's anything they can do besides run the ball. Like, I don't think there is another solution that helps them solve that problem than running the ball. And so it just becomes this question of, will they do it? And, you know, history this year tells us they will not do it. But they did it to open the game, and they did it to close the game. I mean, it was not as bad as the Vegas game the week before. Still bad.
No, it was still
marginally
bad.
Better.
It was still pretty
marginally
bad.
Better.
The thing is that, you know, I don't know how much more you have to get slapped in the face, you know, to realize you got to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're not going to. And they're just not going to. Like, I'll believe it when I see it.
What's the difference between thinking. Last year and this year?
It's wishful thinking to sit here and say, this is going to be the week that they've got. We've been saying that for week after week after week after week.
Is the biggest difference, though, because they obviously they did this last year. It's why I never bailed on them last year, why I actually liked their chances. Is the only difference that they are healthier at receiver and they just can't help themselves?
Yes. Dan Israel said that a week ago. I mean, this was a conversation we had with him 1 week ago.
But they're not even throwing to the receivers. About they're throwing to the tight ends.
Patrick Mahomes has gotten DeAndre Hopkins worked in and Xavier Worthy worked in. Like, those two guys are getting targets.
But he was working in Rice. He was peppering Rice with targets. Yeah,
those guys are getting targets, you know, for sure. But it's out of necessity. I think that's what happened a year ago, was out of necessity. They didn't have any other option but to run the football. And when Rashee Rice started to come along later in the season, towards the end of the regular season in the playoffs, they started giving him the ball more at that point, but they didn't have any other choice but to run the football. They didn't have anybody to be like, every time they threw the ball to MVS or Kadarius Toney or Sky Moore, they were dropping it. Every time that Travis Kelce was throwing the ball, he was dropping it. Like, Travis Kelce dealt with drops a season ago. So there was no other choice but to run the football with Isaiah Pacheco. That was the only spark in the offense until Rashee Rice came along later in the season. It was an incredibly frustrating offense, as we all remember a year ago. This year, there are more reliable options to be a pass catcher for Patrick Mahomes. And I think that you hit the nail on the head when you said they just can't help themselves. I think that's what it is. They cannot help themselves. It doesn't matter if you're dealing with a first and 10 situation. There were several plays where, like, Patrick Mahomes had nobody in the backfield with him on first down. Like, you knew that they were going to throw the football. There was not any other choice. And it might have been a screen. It might have been a quick hitter. It might have been a quick slant, whatever.
And those things in an Andy Reid offense count, right, as a run. But the issue I would take with that, because that does protect Mahomes, and I understand that, the end arounds and the screens and all those things. I get it, and that's fair. But it still doesn't take advantage of the true strength of this offense, which is in the interior of the offensive line, and having Isaiah Pacheco back. Look, I am a believer, and I've said this for 2 years now, they need to be careful with Pacheco so that they can have him in the playoffs. And somebody brought that point up yesterday. It's a good point. But they also have Kareem Hunt. They have Carson Steele. They have guys that can do what they need to do in their run game.
I said it yesterday. So Majay Perine had a couple of good plays.
It's fine. I don't care who carries it.
Like, they've got depth at running back now.
You and I could carry it behind that interior line and gain 3 yards. You know what I mean? Like, they just have to do it, not because it makes their offense the most effective. The most effective offense is to run Isaiah Pacheco 20 times, and I'm okay with not doing that particular thing until the postseason. I am, because I think you got to protect Pacheco a little bit. The most important thing to protect Mahomes is to just settle for clock draining, right? Like, keep the defense off the field and limit the times Mahomes has to drive. If you're going to look, if the argument is you've got to protect Pacheco and keep him healthy for the playoffs, isn't it even more amplified that you've got to protect Mahomes and keep him healthy going into the playoffs? And I'm sorry, but dropping back 40 to 50 times a game is not the answer for that right now.
I agree with you 100%. There's nothing more frustrating than when you're in the middle of a game, and especially like in the third quarter, because it follows this formula. And this is kind of the way that everything, I know that there are weird, like, insane things that happen in each Chiefs game, but by and large, people, you know, want to say the NFL is scripted. The Chiefs follow kind of the same script where they come out, they establish the run early on. They did that last week. They come out to a lead, whatever that looks like, you know, however they get there, they have a lead of some kind. And then after halftime, the opponent adjusts. In the case of Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers, they adjusted. They get back in the game. The Chargers take the lead. And then the Chiefs find a way to pull it out at the very end. That's what has happened the last couple of weeks. And the bottom line is that they are not able to put teams away. Usually it's in the second half. The best way to do that is to control the clock, to hold on to the ball, to keep possession, to keep your defense off the field, to do all of these things that they're not doing. They either forget about it, or they refuse to, or whatever the situation is. It just doesn't work. It doesn't happen that way. and they end up becoming incredibly one-dimensional, incredibly predictable. And I'm at the point now where I'm done talking about, like, this is going to be the week that they're going to do it, because they're not. They haven't, and they won't.
I would only caution you that you, like, and it's not, I shouldn't say you, because it's a lot of people. Like, a lot of people also thought it was not correctable, the issues they were dealing with last year, and they got it corrected. There are still 4 regular season games to go. And I do think that it's correctable, and I do think they've at least got a small history of making and doing the necessary things by the postseason. And the other thing is, they're 12-1. And so, like, if they get there, I'm most worried about getting there with everything intact, the way Mahomes is taking a beating. If they get to the postseason and this version of a Chiefs team plays the Bills, let's say, there's no doubt in my mind they can beat the Bills. Especially in what looks like it'll be a home game now, right? Like, they can beat the Bills. That's not that big a deal. They just got to be able to get there in one piece. That's what I'm the most concerned about. We'll see. We'll talk to Dan Israel top of the hour about it. We got one more short segment to go in this hour. We'll be right back. Don't go away. It's Albrecht and Castor at Sports Daily. Have you seen, Tommy, the transfer portal opened yesterday? Did you see the system crashed? So I guess the system crashed. There's been so many transfers. CBS puts this in perspective, 24/7 Sports. In the 1920 cycle, in its entirety, 1,678 players entered the portal. As of last night, with only not one full day to enter, there were already 1,537
holy cow
in the transfer portal. So look, this is the way it is, everybody. And I know that it's frustrating. The only solution to that particular issue, if you think it's an issue, is to compensate the players and hold them to that compensation. You know what I mean? Like, not a scholarship, but a compensation agreement that has escalators or kick-ins based on service time, essentially. It's a contract. That's the only way you solve that, if you think that's an issue. If you don't think it's an issue, and I don't know that I do. I'm sort of in the middle of this discussion. I don't like that it's happening, but until they're compensated and have a work agreement, I don't have an issue. Rick says there should be a one-time free transfer rule. I think that can be a part of the solution, but I don't think you can blindly throw that at it, Rick, because there's not a one-time coaching change rule, right? There's not a one-time coach can leave the school and break contract rule. You just can't hold the players to different standards that you hold coaches and administrators. You can't do that. And unless they're contractually obligated to do it, you can't. And so that's the ultimate solution, I think, Tommy, is to get that sorted out through compensation and say, yeah, you've got to complete X number of years to get your full compensation, all of those kinds of things, just very similar to any other work contract for anybody else. That's the only thing I can think of. Otherwise, buckle up and get ready for the ride and know that teams can turn their fortunes around very, very quickly now in college football.
Well, it's also going to have to be tied in to the NCAA in some capacity, because you can, put together some kind of contract or work agreement or whatever, but it's going to come down to eligibility as well, right? And so if the NCAA isn't on the same page with that, which they're not, I mean, they've been fighting this whole thing tooth and nail. That's what's really slowed this whole thing down. Until you've got alignment from both the institutional side and the governing body side, and it's probably going to take, like, the Supreme Court again, you know, to get them on the same page, that's going to hamstring everything.
You're right. And the NCAA is so sick of being sued, they're going to roll over and accept anything. Those days, I think, are long gone. They're just getting the pants sued off of them every which way they turn around, because the system's been so stupid for so long and illegal, obviously. So it's going to be, though, we're not there yet, and we won't be for a little while. So we just have to sort of deal with it, unfortunately. But it's all a part of the change that'll get us to a better place long term. But I thought that was funny. IT, system crash, too many people in the transfer portal. What does it look like when the transfer portal crashes? All right, we're coming right back.
Like an actual portal, you know, like
right.
a Star
yeah,
Trek
that's,
portal.
That's the only way to. That's the only way to not pull your hair out yeah. is to have fun with it and envision this magical, yeah, like tunnel that like Star Wars hyperdrive. You know, yeah. when the stars fly yeah. past. That's what it has to look like in my head, anyway. All right, we're gonna come back. Dan Israel joins us next hour, top of the hour. We'll also talk a little Shockers in our next hour. Get to them. We didn't have a chance yesterday, and on the way out. Let's give away some HTO. We've got Illumination tickets coming in the second hour as well. But right now, we'll do some HTO. Free iced tea, free iced or hot coffee, one of each. All you got to do to win that is to text the keyword tea to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. These are good for either Wichita location or in Derby. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider, joins us next.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Caught! Touchdown! Kansas City!
Hey, Chiefs Kingdom, we have you covered. Joining Sports Daily Live, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, Dan Israel.
Welcome in, everybody. Welcome back in for hour number two. We're going to talk a little Shockers. We'll talk KU football and all the changes happening and some not changes there as well. And Lawrence coming up later in the hour. Right now, though, our Chiefs insider, Dan Israel, joins the program. Dan, welcome in. And here we go again. Just same old for the Chiefs here.
It's literally starting to feel like Groundhog Day. You know, this is crazy.
It is crazy. And what's crazy about it and what's we'll never see it again. I don't think.
Yeah.
What's crazy about it though is why won't Andy Reid run the ball, Dan? Like can you go down to the office and just knock on the door and say, Andy, you know, you kind of started the game with it, 5 carries in the opening drive. You ended the game with it, helped Jai's clock. Why can't we do that in the middle of the game?
Yeah. It frustrates me, especially in the red zone. You know, just pound the ball, especially when we're good at it, you know, do it. But I know it's not glamorous. I don't think he has this desire to show off. I think it's just literally he thinks that, you know, the balance is different than what it really is. I always want to ask him, and I'm just too chicken to do it. You know, when you look at the stats and you 70 snaps and you see you only ran it 14 times, does that shock you? Do you go, really? Thought we ran it more than that. I don't know. Someday I'll ask him.
You know, on that note, Dan, I mean, Patrick Mahomes again under siege a lot in the game on Sunday night. And it just seems like with everything that we know about this team and the personnel that they have, the struggles they've had on the outside of the offensive line, how good they've been historically with the interior of the offensive line, and then just having Isaiah Pacheco back healthy with Kareem Hunt and then the change of pace guys and Carson Steele and Samaje Perine, that it just should be a given that they run the ball. I know that, again, like Jacob mentioned, they started the game with it, they ended the game with it. So when it really was the most important, they did run the football. There's just something about a lapse in the middle of the game where it just kind of goes away.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes I look down and they line up in the shotgun and it's like, why are we in the shotgun?
Yeah.
Why are we in the shotgun for this? We're always in the shotgun. Now, look, that could be strategy and the way the schema of what Coach Reid develops. You know, he wants to disguise it with the shotgun. But I always think, you know, the first thing we do is, and when we run the ball, sometimes we run it, we're going back in the shotgun. So the ball goes 7 yards. The running back has to get 7 yards just to get back to the line of scrimmage. But I don't know. I can't quite answer all of that, but I do think the offensive line has been very good at rushing, blocking for the rushing plays. And I think that, you know, the addition of TJ Humphries was significant on Sunday. I don't want to say that he had an A-plus grade, but his mechanics were so much more sound. And he won a lot of battles. He lost a few as well, but the guy hasn't played since New Year's Eve of last year. And so I feel like, you know, we kind of threw him into the fire and he did an okay job. Unfortunately, now battling a hamstring, we'll see what happens with that. But I do think brighter days if we can get him back on the field and get him back up to football shape. I do think we're going to see, you know, some better line play, which was just imperative. It was becoming so that problem was becoming so glaring. I don't see how they could ignore it.
Well, and so what is the latest on the injury? Because it's, you know, I'm getting like mixed signals here. The word is feels pretty good, but we'll know after an MRI. I would think you wouldn't need an MRI if it feels good.
Yeah, Jacob, that's exactly what I thought too. It's like, you know, hamstrings, they don't do MRIs for hamstrings routinely that I'm aware of. So something makes me think they might be a little bit more concerned. Maybe they're just being precautious because of, you know, his previous injury. In fact, I don't even know if it's the hamstring on the leg that on the side that he had the knee injury, but it kind of rung strange to me. It's like an MRI for a hamstring. It just seemed a little odd to me. So, and that's my understanding of the injury is we're just waiting on that, the results of that.
I felt like Dan defensively for Kansas City, things looked better. Not perfect, but better against the Chargers than what we had seen in recent weeks. You know, it wasn't necessarily even about the pass rush quite as much. I mean, I know that they were able to, you know, get some pressure on Justin Herbert in that game, but I felt like the secondary stepped up a little bit. It really wasn't, and I know that the Chargers were lacking Ladd McConkey in the game, but I did feel like maybe things are starting to turn a corner, and hopefully this defense can get back to an overall unit that we saw at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, Tommy, I thought so too. I was kind of encouraged. I thought Joshua Williams was playing better, and then bam, you know, yeah. I just don't know how we keep this kid on the field. And, you know, not knocking Najee Johnson. I mean, he's playing his heart out, but, you know, I felt like Williams was doing a little bit better. And I think that, you know, the Chiefs' level of concern can be referenced by the fact that they're signing Steven Nelson back to the team, you know. And look, I will say this, you got to be impressed that Brett Veach is just, I mean, he's aware of not only players on other teams, players in other practice squads, but guys that are literally on the couch. This is a guy we literally signed off the front room couch. So now Steven Nelson, I don't want to say that that's indicates how he's going to play, right? But Veach's awareness that this guy is available, that guy is available, that's impressive to me. Whether or not Nelson's, you know, still in shape, ready to play, I don't know. We're just going to have to see. But I think the fact that they went out and got him kind of indicates the way they feel about their cornerback situation.
It's a problem. Is it correctable? And you know, you still, what do they have, 3 sacks, 2.5 sacks? Still doesn't feel like they're getting enough pressure. It's been better, though, I think, to be fair. Is there another level for the pass rush?
Yeah, I think so.
I do too, but I don't want to be unrealistic, but it does feel like they can get better there.
Yeah, I think so. I think one of the things that improved on Sunday was the play of the safeties. I think the safeties were helping the coverage situation. And when you do that, you get those two guys, even if one of them stays back and helps the secondary, cornerbacks have a little more freedom to do what they need to do. And overall, the secondary just works better. So I think so. But I think there is another gear there. There is a shutdown gear that we've seen at times. We've seen flashes of it. Now they just need to execute it. It seems like they have a quarter in each game where they just kind of fall apart, right? I mean, this last week was the third quarter, and it seems to me like that old shutdown in the second half kind of defense is still out there. We just have to kind of execute better to get there.
Going back to the play calling and the offense, Dan, it was definitely apparent to me that when all the times that Patrick Mahomes was dropping back and throwing the football, there were multiple play calls where he was getting the ball out of his hand super fast. Part of that is out of necessity for sure. Otherwise, he's going to get killed back in the backfield. But he, you know, even that touchdown pass to DeAndre Hopkins, he barely held onto the ball for a second before he got it to Hopkins. That's, I would imagine that even if the play calling doesn't change and they don't run the ball more, we're going to have to see quite a bit more of that from Patrick Mahomes in the pass game, not being able and not having the luxury of letting things develop downfield quite as much, because he's got to get the ball out of his hands quickly or else he's going to get killed.
Yeah, Tommy, I agree. I like it. I think we need to be doing more of it. You know, I really feel like there's nothing wrong with taking 8 or 12 yards and moving the ball that way. I think sometimes we get so, boy, want, you know, let's make sure before I get rid of this ball that I don't have a big play. Yeah. And I just feel like, you know, the more they do that, especially when you know you've got, look, Kelsey goes in the, Kelsey and Mahomes are so good at reading defenses. Kelsey knows where there's going to be absence. Look at that last play for the first down. He just went and sat down in this open space. He didn't even move. He wasn't evading a defender. He knew exactly where the seams were. He went and sat in the middle of two seams, and Mahomes just had to find him, and he did. And so I love that play. But, you know, rolling out that – you know, moving the pocket, all of that to me is great, but just line up, quick snap the ball and throw it. They did that a couple of times. And I just like, look, it's 8 yards. Take 8 yards all day long. I love that, those kinds of plays. And I also think that loosens everybody up, right? It keeps them from stacking the box. It keeps them from dropping back into coverage. They don't have time for that. If they try to stack the box and drop back into coverage, the ball will be gone by then. So I love it. I'd love to see more of it.
Or just run the ball.
hard to argue with that, Jacob.
Anywho, the Browns are interesting. So that's next here. And I know everybody wants to laugh, but Jameis is slinging it.
Yeah.
Which I think is dangerous for the Chiefs defensively. Yeah. And they got Myles Garrett, which is obviously a massive, massive, massive concern for Patrick Mahomes. The Chiefs are only 5.44. It's down to 4. Everybody's betting the Browns, apparently.
Really?
Yeah. But I get it. Like, I know it's the Browns and they won a ton of games, but stylistically, this is kind of a bad matchup for the Chiefs.
Yeah, I would have much rather matched up against them in September. They weren't playing good ball in September.
And they didn't have Jameis, right? Who's just going to throw it everywhere.
Yeah, Jameis is actually, and look, you know, he has a history of throwing pick sixes, no doubt. The problem is he can get a lot done too. So, you know, it becomes kind of that cost of doing business. Okay, he's going to throw a pick six, but he's going to also, you know, throw two touchdowns and they're going to rush for two. So I do think Jameis Winston has improved this squad immeasurably. I mean, they're maybe not playoff caliber, but they can beat you on a Sunday for sure. I mean, they've kept it close in several of these last few weeks. And you mentioned Myles Garrett, you know, I mean, that's just, it feels like we're playing this parade of defensive ends with Max Crosby and Bosa and Myles Garrett. And to think that DJ Humphries might not be back out on the field, it's like, what are we going to do? How are we going to stop this guy? And back to Tommy's point, both your points, rush and throw the ball quick. Don't give them time to do anything. You know, that seems to be the best defense against what we've got on an offensive line.
We've gone all this time, Dan, haven't even mentioned Matthew Wright and the game-winning field goal. Three different kickers this season have won kicked game-winning field goals for the Chiefs. it's wild. And the fact that he was able to get that field goal in after doinking it off off the rail, like it is incredible.
Yeah, I'm calling that the Doinkalarooski in honor of Coach Reed's State Farm ads. Look, that thing hit the goalpost, and I think everybody's heart completely stopped. It was just, you know, it's hard to tell whether it bounces in or out if you're watching it on TV. And it's like, oh, my goodness, if that could have been, it couldn't have been any closer. He hits the upright a little more solid. That ball bounces out instead of in. And it's fascinating to me, this special team situation. And, right, look, you know, that was a lot of pressure, man. You're talking about games on the line and him coming off the, you know, this kid's been through a lot this season already. And I love seeing him stand next to Mahomes and Chris Jones and stuff. He looks like a child almost. He's so small. But hey, as long as you can kick the football, that's all that matters. I also thought it was interesting. Did you guys, I found it fascinating that Justin Reed was doing the kickoffs.
Yep.
You know,
I like it because it gives you, I said that from the beginning, it gives you an extra tackler out there.
Yeah, that's true.
Go a couple doors down, tell Taylor Swift her magnet that, you know, guided that football in, because we all know the fix is in. She did a nice job there to make that ball doink in instead of out. It's another conversation for another day. I hate not trying to score at the end of a game.
Yeah.
Just, you know, whatever. But hey, it's working. They're 12-1, Dan. It's that early noon call. You guys are getting some of these this year. You got the noon window here. It's on the road, though, which is challenging, I know. But what do you guys have in store for us?
Yeah, you know, the noon window doesn't give us much freedom. So it'll be just our straight pregame show. I always think with the noon window, though, it's weird now. I have to set an alarm. It's like, you know, I have to get up early and what's this? But it's kind of fun to do for a change, because the nice thing is I'll be home in my own bed by 9 o'clock that night, you know, playing an early game. It's kind of nice. So if you're on the road playing an early game, it's the way to do it.
Dan, we appreciate it. Good luck. Maybe they'll run the ball against the Browns. Who knows? Doubt it, but maybe.
Yeah, don't count on it. It's just
a boy can dream, right?
Yeah. When you're 12-1, like, what are you going to say? Yeah. Like, hey, we're 12-1, you know?
That's right.
Dan, we appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet, guys. Have a good Tuesday.
You can follow Dan on social media. You can hear Dan every time the Chiefs play over on 98.7, KNSS, home of the Chiefs here in Wichita. I'm intrigued by this game. I got to do something. This is a... It's both a good test for them because of the style, but that's a bad matchup, I think, for Kansas City. It'll challenge them to be better in the ways that we know they're going to have to be. We'll say that. All right, two other things that we really want to get to in this hour. KU football is going through a lot of changes right now, and then some consistency. There's been a whirlwind. We'll get you caught up. I know Tommy's had his finger to the pulse of all of that. We'll also talk Shockers. We didn't get a chance to get to that yesterday. We've got Paul Mills coming in tomorrow to chat, but we'll look back at the East Tennessee State game and sort of where things stand right now for Wichita State. Those two topics still to come here on Sports Daily. Thank you to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH. Also, later in the show, your chance to win tickets to Illuminations at Botanica. It's all Brockton Caster. Don't go away. All right, who wants to go to Illuminations at Botanica? You can win a 4-pack right now, courtesy of Sports Daily, KFH, and Odyssey Wichita. Simply text the keyword SHINE to the short code 20357. One entry per person per day. Winners will be drawn on Friday. Again, text 20357, and the keyword is SHINE. Good luck, everybody. Tommy, let's start with KU. All right, so there's been a lot of things happening. We'll have Shreya Slada, our KU insider, in tomorrow. The biggest headline news is Jalen Daniels is coming back. The other massive piece of news is that we're going to get changes at both coordinators. And then, like, there's a lot of movement right now for this KU football program. And it's interesting because Jalen Daniels, like, do they need to turn the page? It's going to be a rebuilding year. Or do you bring him back? And he's obviously good. Like, I'm surprised he came back. But B, like, what direction do you think they take next year?
Well, I mean, I think that a huge part of it for Jalen Daniels, not only NIL, but also he's got to be aligned with Lance Leipold on the direction of the offense. And that's why I think a large reason Jalen Daniels decided to come back, Jeff Grimes is gone. He's not the offensive coordinator anymore. He goes off to Wisconsin. It was a one-year tenure for Jeff Grimes and Lawrence. A lot of criticism on Grimes. It got better as the season went on, but you know, still they underachieved offensively as a whole throughout the entire season. So now you've got Jim Zabrowski, who has a ton of experience with Jalen Daniels. He's been the quarterback's coach for a long time. He runs the offense now. Just announced this morning, Matt Lubick, who was with the Jayhawks for a number of years, most recently Nevada's offensive coordinator, it was announced today that he's coming back as co-offensive coordinator with Jim Zabrowski. He's got a lot of familiarity, again, with the Jayhawks program. So I think those two things are aligned, and I think a lot of it has to do with why Jalen Daniels decided to come back for one more year. It's that continuity at the coordinator and guys that he's really familiar with.
Yeah, I think it's the right play. I guess my question becomes, is Jalen Daniels a centerpiece that will allow them to go attack the portal as aggressively as they'll almost certainly have to be competitive next year?
Like, I think they're so. Going,
while they have Jalen Daniels back, which is great because he's a good quarterback, And he fixed his issues from early in the year, thankfully. They need a lot, right? they need a running back now. They need probably what, at least two reliable pass catchers, a lot of offensive linemen.
Tight end help, Jared Casey linemen. Is gone. Yeah, like they're basically going to have to rebuild a lot of the skill position. You know, and that's a big part of it too. I think that, you know, knowing that he feels comfortable with Jim Zabrowski and Matt Lubick has been with the program before. I think, because remember, when Jalen Daniels had his ascension nationally before he got injured, Andy right. Kotelnicki was running the offense. Both Jim Zabrowski and Matt Lubick worked very closely with Andy Kotelnicki. And so this is a return to sort of that system that allowed Jalen Daniels to be the best version of himself. He wasn't the best version of himself under Jeff Grimes. There were other factors too. It wasn't just Jeff Grimes' fault, but it was by and large, he was the offensive coordinator and the play caller and all of that. And he didn't put Jalen Daniels in great positions to be successful early in the season. It did get better. They did adjust, but this is a return to the system that allowed Jalen Daniels to again be the best version of himself.
And he'll have to basically work with an entire new group of skill guys, which is going to be challenging, I think, next year for whatever. Now, it can be done. Of course it can be done. We see it happen all the time. TCU played in a playoff. We've got Arizona State on top of the Big 12 when they were supposed to be on bottom. Like these kinds of turnarounds happen literally every year in college football, Indiana. But it helps to have Jalen Daniels at the centerpiece of needing to do that.
It does.
And so that's great news. That's great news for the Jayhawks.
They also make a change at defensive coordinator, too. Brian Borland announced his retirement. Right. So they promoted DK McDonald, who had been on staff the previous year on the defense. He's the new defensive coordinator. I would have liked for the Jayhawks to maybe look externally to find another defensive coordinator, but I think that a change was needed at both coordinator positions.
Sure,
and
it was.
You know, so ultimately I'm okay with the direction that they went because Leipold had to shake things up.
He did. And I just like, I don't have any idea how to, and I won't after the portal either, probably because I think the portal is very confusing, how to like set expectations for KU next year. And honestly, that might be the best thing that ever happened to the Jayhawks. I just hope that the fans embrace this chapter as much as they have going into that new stadium, and we'll see. You know, that part of it's curious. Whereas K-State, who we also pay very close attention to, will come in and likely be, if not picked to win the Big 12, one of the top two or three teams to win the Big 12 next year. Theirs is simpler.
There are going to be high expectations, I think, for Kansas State next season for sure.
Yeah. And I just don't know how to compare KU's expectations, because this year it was very easy. They're both expected to win the Big 12, right? It was an easy set of expectations.
Lance Leipold at KU has had more success when there have been very little or no expectations on him.
Which isn't a good thing.
Yeah.
It's not a good thing, but that sticks in my head. That's what I'm saying. Like, is it going to be good enough if the expectation is to, let's say, finish 7th in the Big 12? But they finish 5th and make a bowl game. Is that going to be good enough to recapture what the program had going into this season? I think that becomes the question that I'll be paying attention to.
Yeah, I think so. And here's the reason why. I've said this on this show before. I've said it for years. Kansas football fans are not asking for much. They're asking to have a winning record and be a bowl-eligible team. And maybe every once in a while be in contention for a 12-team playoff spot, be in the top 25 from time to time. Like, that's what, like, this is not a program where the fan base, I think, by and large, is like going in expecting, like, we are going to be competing for national championships, Big 12 championships, all of that year in, year out. That's never been this program in the entire history of the program. So, really, like, the underperforming this year when they were 1-5 and then when they were 2-6, that was unacceptable because it was going to take a huge rally for them to even be bowl eligible, which is the baseline of what Kansas fans, I think, are asking for. And so as long as they get back to that point, everything else is gravy as far as I'm concerned.
That might be all you're asking for, but is that going to sell out the stadium? Because ultimately, more than ever before, more than any time in the history of the program, based on the landscape of college athletics and the way it's changing, you'd better be able to sell out your football stadium or you're not going to keep up, because the financials are changing so much in the sport.
Might be a reason why the new KU stadium is smaller in capacity than
which is okay.
The other stadiums.
And I don't have a problem with that, but you still got to fill it up.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And this year, if they're playing in that new stadium, they're not filling it up, you know, like, and so like that to me is where I get it. I get that expectations are low and everybody just wants to be able to watch them on a Saturday, but the way this is going, you've got to be able to put butts in the seats. So I don't know. And I don't know this, by the way. I don't know if being in the mix to middle of the pack for a bowl game puts enough butts in the seats. It did when they were so bad for so long. But now that they're past that horrible chapter of the program's history, now that it's not, it's been so bad. And like, if it's consistently 6 or 7 wins, is that enough to get enough people there to sell out a football game?
Yeah, I think
so.
Here's the thing.
Question.
Kansas may be past that really terrible period, but I think every single person that is affiliated or a fan of that program, they know that it's one bad move away from being right back to where they were before. Because remember, it was a decision to move on from Mark Mangino in 2009. And it was very quickly after that, when Turner Gill came in, that things fell apart and they went to the very bottom of the cellar, and they stayed there for over a decade. So, I don't think that people are going to just say, okay, cool, like, we're good with 6 or 7 wins always, and like, we never want more than that. Or of course they want more than that. Like, you want them to be competitive and potentially win a conference championship, you know, be in the playoff, all of that. But I'm not sure that it is realistic to think that this is a program that should be in that spot year in and year out. I think the baseline should be just make a bowl game every year, like, just be a bowl eligible team each year. And then every couple of years, if you can challenge, you know, to win a conference championship or whatever, that's great.
I hope so, and I'm sure glad Jalen Daniels will be back to help him try to get to a bowl game next year, because without him, it would be dicey. It would be dicey. And all these changes are, I think, whether we don't know if they're positive or not yet, they're necessary. Like, all the changes that are happening are necessary changes based on the year we just had. I definitely think that is the case. All right, let's take one more break here. We're going to give the Shockers their due notice. We'll get you caught up. Where do they sit in the net? What does the American look like in the net? And how do we use that to set expectations with the conference season looming? We'll get into that as we make our way through it here. Shocker basketball talk next. If you ever miss the show, by the way, you can always go back and listen to the show through the Odyssey app in a podcast form. We've told you before, but we say it only to let you know that it's a very popular way to listen to the show. We've had thousands and thousands of people each month download the podcast. It's a great way to be able to take the show with you wherever you are. Speaking of that Odyssey app where you can find it, you can also find at 6 o'clock tonight, Mitch Holthus, the Chiefs Kingdom Show. If you can't listen to it on the air, if you're not in your car, you can listen to it on the Odyssey app. Just search KFH. We'll be right back. Shocker Talk next on Sports Daily.
...97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH, and we are glad to be with you on this Tuesday, big Tuesday. We've got a big show coming for you as well tomorrow. It's a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday if you want to plan your wardrobe appropriately. We'll have Shreya Slada in, our KU insider, talk about all these changes for KU football we were just talking about. Talk about KU basketball's free fall from number 1 to number 10 in the top 25 after a bad week. And we'll have Paul Mills, Wichita State Edmonds basketball coach. He'll be on with us tomorrow in our second hour. Tommy, let's talk a little Shocker hoops. Nice win over East Tennessee State. Nice week with a convincing win over Alcorn State, I should say, and East Tennessee State. Now they go to DePaul this weekend on Saturday, which will be another fun one. And I have not checked DePaul. Let me do that real quick. DePaul's top 70 So that will be a really, really nice game. Road game with a team like that, that Tommy, that could end up as a really nice resume game, quite frankly. So the Shockers currently sit at 80 in the net, and they're the third-ranked American team. So you've got Memphis, Tommy, at 46. You've got North Texas at 68, Wichita State at 80. Then you've got Florida Atlantic at 101, and we'll, for all intents and purposes, call them a top 100 team. Then you're going down to like 137 for Rice. East Carolina, South Florida, and Temple are all around 175. UAB's at 215. Do you think we have enough of a sample size here to call what should be a three-horse race in the American and Wichita State to be one of those horses?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think at this point you kind of have seen what programs are, you know, sort of rising to the top a little bit, at least through non-con, and things can always change once you get into conference play. But Memphis, you know, what they did on the national stage at the Maui Invitational, I think is impressive. You know, it's a team that I think everybody knew they would be good, but I'm not sure that there were a ton of expectations that they would be at least to this level early on in the season. Now, we know what Memphis does, and we know how things have worked historically with them. Once they get into conference play, they lose some games that they probably shouldn't lose and that sort of thing, fall back down to earth somewhat. But at least to start off the year in the non-con, yeah, I think that they have shown that they're going to be a team to be reckoned with. And I've got no problem at all having Wichita State in that conversation, too.
I mean, I think they should be. And I think, I mean, look, we're almost to the conference schedule. I think we can get to the point where we start to set some expectations where, you know, at the beginning of the year, we're kind of guessing at that. The net rankings are out. Ken Pom mostly agrees. Like, the Shockers appear to pretty clearly be one of the top three teams. I don't know that this is going to be a situation where there's an at-large coming out of the American. I don't know that yet, but I think it's also too early to say that they're definitively won't be, right? You look at Wichita State's schedule, just mentioned it, on the road at DePaul, that could end up being a really good game. K-State, probably not going to get the help they need out of that game. And then those are their next two chances.
But still, that's a power four, you know, victory, you know, that they could get. So that is important. I mean, it all
depends on where they end up. Is that a quad one game, a quad two game? Like, I don't know what to make of K-State. So I don't really know. But if I look at their AAC schedule, they do go to Memphis. They get North Texas at home. They get Memphis twice. They get them both twice. So that's four games right there. Plus two more here where you think, okay, the Shockers might be able to get, you know, some. They haven't set quad games yet in the net, by the way. But that gives you a chance to that'll be enough games probably to try and build that resume up a little bit. Maybe there's an at-large possibility there. I don't know. It depends on how good, I guess, Memphis and North Texas are. Man, I wish the Shockers had Ronnie DeGray. That's all I keep thinking about. Well, I'll ask Paul Mills about that. Like, how does it evolve without him out there? They obviously did a nice job last week in that regard against Alcorn State and against East Tennessee State. But man, knowing that they appear to be this close, you'd sure like them to be healthy. But it's been a real look. It's been a nice start. They had 96. They scored 96.
Yeah. And 96. And if you're going through the net rankings, I mean, obviously Florida Atlantic is right outside of the top 100 there at 101, but then there's a pretty severe drop off after that. Rice, you have to go all the way down to close to 140, and then the other teams are lower than that. So I think the most important thing for Wichita State, now that we sort of have at least a better handle on the way the conference, at least from a net perspective and a KenPom perspective, are shaping out through the non-conference, more than anything, you need to take care of the games that you should be taking care of. Like, outside of the teams that you just mentioned in Memphis, North Texas, and then I said Florida Atlantic, outside of those teams, in conference play, you've got to handle your business. And I don't care if you're playing those games inside Coke Arena or you're going on the road. You've got to take care of those games because a lot of those teams, as of right now in the conference, are way far down in the net and the KenPom. So you should be handling your business in those games because you can't afford in a conference like the American to slip up in a game against a much inferior opponent.
And that brings up, you took the words out of my mouth. How many of those games do they need to be winning? It is unrealistic in college basketball to sit here and say they need to win all the games against the other teams that they put. We know how hard it is to win road games in conference. How many of those losses could they afford, though, if we truly wanted to see them have at-large consideration? Let's say they just split with Memphis and North Texas. I think you're looking in a situation. So if you take those two losses, I don't know that they'd be able to have any more than three others to those other teams.
You need to probably have four or five.
So how realistic then is it to say Wichita State could finish with only four or five losses in the conference to maybe get some at-large consideration? I would probably concede that that's not fair. And if that's the case, then we get into this situation of the Shockers are going to have to win the conference tournament to get into the NCAA tournament. And if that's the case, that sort of pulls away a little bit from the urgency of a lot of these games. And I don't like that. You know what I mean? Like at the beginning, like at the baseline, yeah, we want to see them finish near the top of the league. Like, right? But we also want to see them make the NCAA tournament. Is finishing top three in the American a good enough set of progress for year two in Paul Mills? I think so.
They were 5-13 in the conference a season ago. So sure. I mean, like if you finish in the top three, that's a significant improvement.
I agree. But then what does it mean for year three when they're going to lose so many of these players? You know what I mean? Like
every team is going to lose a lot of players. You're going to have to rebuild every single year.
That's what I'm saying. Do we reset expectations every year and just say, you know, this roster this year should finish this way. And if it does, that was a good year. And if it doesn't, that was a good, we know that's not going to be reality. They're going to have to do it consistently.
It's all context, right? Like, I don't think that, you know, you finish this season, like let's say they finish third in the American. I'm just spitballing here. Third in the American, and then they don't make the NCAA tournament. Let's just say that hypothetically. I don't think as soon as the season ends, you can say, okay, well, now they need to do X next season. I think you have to wait and see the way the roster pans out.
But isn't that all a part of it? Don't you know? I guess that's my point. Isn't like if you finish third this year, then the next year you need to be competing for the league title. I think for Wichita State it is, because I think finishing third needs to be a catalyst to bringing in a really good roster, whether it's returners or not, the next year. And I don't think we're being unfair with it. I think it's the reality of college basketball right now. I can tell you right now that if K-State falls flat and is in the bottom half of the league and is not sniffing the NCAA tournament, the Jerome Tang love will cool significantly among the fans, among the donors, among everybody else. Like if they don't, so, and I'm going to say this too, and I believe it with every fiber of my soul that Wichita State should be at about the same level as K-State.
Well, let's talk hypotheticals then. I mean,
in a program stacking,
there are four remaining non-conference games for the Shockers. I think you could probably chalk up the Kansas City game and the Friends game as wins, you would think. And then, DePaul and K-State, I think if you get, you obviously want to win both of them, but I think baseline, as long as you're getting one of the two. Okay, so then you end non-conference play with two losses. Okay, you enter into conference play with what? That's a record of 11-2 going into conference play at that point. If they split the series with Memphis and they split the series with North Texas, then you're talking about four losses. I think they can maybe afford two more, maybe three more to be a six or seven loss team going into the conference tournament. And then if they lose one more and they don't win the conference, you know, then you're looking at a 7 or 8 loss team going into Selection Sunday. And depending on the strength of schedule, that's going to come into play whether or not they're an at-large team. So, I mean, a lot of things have to happen to get to that point, but that would be the path that I would look at where they could at least be in consideration, at least a conversation about an NCAA at-large bid. But if any one of those things gets off track, then you're talking about, yeah, they've got to go in and they've got to win the conference tournament.
And it may be that way anyway. I am, though, if I'm looking at the net and I'm seeing them at 80, they've got the room to get up higher than that. I don't think that's, if you told me before the year started that the Shockers would have a chance to be within the top 70 of the net by the time conference play starts, I'd have said, sign me up for that, right? Because then you don't have to make up that much ground. You got to handle your business in conference play. But if they can get that up into the top 70 of the net by the time this stretch is done, and obviously the Friends game and the Kansas City game aren't going to help them in the net, but the other two might, I think they're cooking a little bit. I think that's real. I love it. I love it. I'm glad that we're here, and I really wish Ronnie DeGray was playing. We'll have Paul Mills tomorrow again on the show. We'll get the latest on you know what it looks like without Beverly for a while. It was interesting. We saw Quincy Ballard play 25 minutes in the game, and we continue to see that rotation of you know Corey Washington, who's a guard but has some size, kind of go that you know four guard around one thing, and it's going to work in some games, and then there's going to be games where they play good bigs where it's going to be a real challenge for them. And I don't know anything about DePaul's roster, so I can't really help you there. But it's a you know if we're talking about that K-State game, you can go 4-1 against K-State right now. Don't you think?
I think you can. I think you can do that.
So it's, you know, there are going to be games where that's not going to be advantageous. Like I think back to the Northern Iowa game, that would have been a tough game to do that in. That's why I think that game, why Northern Iowa was able to stick around is because they utilized their size. And they, you know, Wichita State handled their business just fine in that game. But we'll get them back in action at DePaul on Saturday. Of course, you'll hear that over on KYN, home of the Shockers, right here in our Odyssey family of networks. We're going to come back. We'll tell you what's on the network today. When we return, don't go away. It's Sports Daily on a Tuesday.